meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will please come to order. It is Thursday, April 28th, 2011. And just for the record, it was snowing outside this morning in what seems like the longest winter of my life. But anyway, thank you to all of you who are here this morning. And we are going to start our agenda this morning with Senator Paul Gazelka's bill on no-fault auto insurance.
Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, I saw no snow.
Actually, I saw it last night coming home from our local government committee meeting at after midnight. But I heard it was snowing in Stillwater this morning as well. But welcome, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, Senate File 389 is the no-fault reform bill. It started off as a very, very big bill, and we condensed it down to primarily focus on what is called soft tissue claims on the auto insurance policy. No fault, just a general quick overview. You have as a minimum $20,000 of medical benefits on your auto insurance policy and $20,000 of other benefits. The other benefits include wage loss, disability income, funeral expense, et cetera. That is a mandated coverage in Minnesota, which we call no-fault. 24 other states at one time had no-fault insurance. That is now down to 9, primarily because of the dramatic increase in costs of that benefit and very little oversight in how medical payments were paid. And so you saw earlier, or you may not have, but Senator Michelle had a bill that would repeal this coverage, no fault, from the auto insurance policy. Senate File 389 does not repeal, but makes an attempt to reform it. And so that's what this does. I believe it's before your committee because it actually saves the state some money. The actual number, I believe, was $31,000, but everything helps. And there's certainly more to it than that, but in fact, I'll maybe mention a couple other things. This bill has been around in a variety of forms for a while. Senator Scheid was the chief author of this last session. I made an attempt to basically focus on one key part of no-fault, and that's soft tissue claims, which is primarily chiropractic and physical therapy claims. It's not like a broken bone. It's the massaging of the muscle, that kind of thing. But soft tissue claims have now grown to be about almost 70% of the total auto insurance medical bill. So it's been a growing area. And primarily, I think, because there's not accountability. If you have a claim on your auto insurance medical bills, there's very little accountability as far as what can be charged, unlike health insurance or workman's comp. And so what this legislation does basically is that if you have a medical claim and it's soft tissue, it's going to be covered now if this passes just like a workman's comp claim, which frankly pays more than health insurance does. To the typical workman's comp claim pays more than health insurance does, but it will pay less than what they can charge right now. Like I said, there's more to it than that, but before your committee, I think we're just looking at the how much we're going to save the state, but I'm open to any questions. And I know that Bob Johnson from the Insurance Federation is here as well and may need to answer other questions.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gazelka, good morning. And you know my issue here, and I just need to go through it again, because when you're starting to talk about chiropractors, and that's what you're really talking about here, I have had them coming out of the woodwork. And you and I talked yesterday about that you had contacted some of the chiropractors, and after you explained to them what you've done, which is different than the beginning, I understand, they were okay, not okay. I guess where I have my issue with this, as I understand it, because of the way chiropractors are reimbursed at a particular level, and I understand that there are some out there that take advantage of every system. Can you just be a little bit more specific, because I know there's a lot of them watching this, and on the second question. The Minnesota Chiropractic Association, have you had conversations with them in reference to this?
Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, I will say that the chiropractic industry is still not happy with this. The original bill simply said after 7 days of coverage under an auto insurance claim, your medical benefits go back to your primary health insurance. And they were passionately opposed to that. And as I listened to the chiropractor's point of view, I agreed. I felt like, you know, my family uses chiropractic care, and I think they do great work. So I was trying to find a way to rein in the costs and to include some accountability in how we pay a bill. And workman's comp has been around for, I know, over 10 years with, in my mind, very little complaint, but actually truly reining in the costs. And so workman's comp claims, the way that would work, they still would get up to 12 weeks of treatment under the work comp system if they were hurt on an auto insurance claim. And if they can prove that they need care, they can do more than one treatment a week. I don't know the exact number. It's Bob Johnson may be able to tell us that. But a significant number of treatments can be done on a weekly basis up to 12 weeks. And if it goes beyond that, then it kicks over back into their regular health insurance plan. But my end goal for this is to drive down the cost of auto insurance in Minnesota. If you look at our rates compared to our neighboring states, we are significantly higher. And the primary reason is no-fault insurance. And so the end goal of this will be accountability for chiropractors and physical therapists. They will get paid more than they would if it was under Blue Cross or, you know, some of the major health providers, because work comp pays more. But it brings in the accountability issue, which isn't there. And unfortunately, there's been a high enough number of people that abuse the system that this reins that in. And you guys have probably seen the 1-800-ASK-GARY and some of those billboards. Those are Florida chiropractic companies that come up to Minnesota because this is easy money.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gazelka. So, and I understand that you're trying to rein in the cost of auto insurance, but are we doing so because the Chiropractic Association has not taken care of their own, or has not? I'm really struggling with this issue, because I feel like we're penalizing the soft tissue folks, the physical therapist and the chiropractors, because of outside forces, as you just said, coming in and
make me. Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Perry, even if there was not the outside forces, it would make sense to me that there was accountability, and we don't have accountability, and work comp reimbursement rates are higher than they would have through any other health insurance provider. So it's not like we're trying to underpay them. I mean, the fact that we're going to pay them more than they would have in primary health care tells me we're not trying to take advantage of them, but we want accountability in the system. And when we presented the bill after we amended it, we had no other group testifying against us, you know, because this also covers ambulance charges and the hospital and the other places that they go, and you would think that those would be the highest medical parts of no fault, but it's soft tissue claims that end up being about 70% of it, and most of that is chiropractor. And so I thought this was the best solution to make sure that we take care of the chiropractor. I mean, I believe in chiropractors, I believe what they do, but require accountability. And I think this works.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is my last one. Senator Gazelka, how do they then go about proving that they need the continued, for an example, I mean, when I had an injury and I had treatment, it went longer than 12 weeks, I can tell you that. And even now, 12 years later, because of sometimes the way I sit and everything, I have to go back. Because of that same injury that I had head and my back. So I'm wondering, how do you justify then, or how does a chiropractor justify that that person needs more treatments?
Yeah,
Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, I'm going to have Bob Johnson for the Insurance Federation add more to this, but I'll focus on the fact that most people only have 20,000 medical benefits. You can have more than that, but most people only have 20, and so you typically use that up with some of the other things that, that go on anyway. But the exact specifics for work comp, I would rather have somebody else answer.
Mr. Jensen. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Senator Perry, on your question that the workers' compensation system after the 1992 law, which is when the current system was put in place, adopted very extensive administrative rules to put a lot of details around. They're called the treatment parameters and the fee schedule. But the treatment parameters, there's, and I just for time purposes, I tell you that there's specific standards that any healthcare provider have to meet, and I would call it generally there has to be improvement, you know, objective evidence in the record of the individual of improvement in terms of the treatments that have been provided. And if the healthcare provider, in this case a chiropractor or a physical therapy, can show that, I could read you, there's a three-part test that's actually drafted in the rules, and it's been there since 1993. If the provider can, and basically what it comes down to is objective clinical findings that showing improvement is evidenced by documentation in the record, in the medical record of resolution, or objectively measured improvements in the physical signs of injury. So there's specific wording that if the provider can show in the record, and as Senator Gazelka mentioned, then you can continue to provide. It's not only one treatment a week. The work comp rules actually have language in them that provide you can get treatments up to 3 to 5 times a week. That's recognized in the rules, but the objective standards of improvement have to be able to be documented to be able to provide the treatment. And I think that that's a, it's a long proven standard. We've got quite a bit of track record in Minnesota under the workers' compensation system with that. And as Senator Gazelka said, bringing it into the auto system, again, it's really important to emphasize that this is a $20,000 amount of coverage, the medical coverage under the no-fault system. So we believe that with that, it keeps all of the providers fully involved in the system, so there's nobody that's excluded. There aren't negotiated rates. This is not managed care a la a Blue Cross or a other major medical. It's a set rate that the fee schedule establishes. And the system expressly contemplates the ability to have continued treatment over, you know, over the course of a 12-week period of time. We think that there's, again, it's a proven track record. There's good experience under it. It's working, and it does contain. It keeps everybody involved, doesn't exclude anybody, but it is containing costs in that in a system in Minnesota. And we think that's a, it's a fair, because of that experience and that we know what it does, that it's fair to bring it into the auto system, which today has no medical cost containment, zero. There's no cost containment in the current system. And I don't think any healthcare system in this state or in Minnesota or anywhere in the country could operate under those constraints, no cost containment. So we think it's fair in that regard. And again, it keeps everybody in. The earlier bill was much stronger. And after 3 hours of hearings, then, you know, the decision was let's scope it back down. And we just we believe it's a fair system, and with the track record in Minnesota, it's going to work in the auto system.
Senator Bonnoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gazelka, I heard this in Commerce, and I don't know if it's changed since then. Okay. So the concern I have, and I am hoping that I heard Mr. Johnson correctly, but the concern I had in Commerce is that that even though you could do up to 3 times a week, there was still that hard and fast 12-week. Are you saying that if you showed progress, Mr. Johnson, that you could go beyond the 12 weeks?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonnoff, my understanding of the work comp system is that there actually is a door to get past it, but it doesn't happen that often. But I actually must confess I should know that more specifically right here sitting answering your question, but I need to make certain in the rules, but I believe that there is an ability, but again the proof standard, most of the care, you know, fits under this time parameters, and most of the injuries, at least in the work comp system, reach the maximum medical improvement. That's the phrase that's in that system, within that 12 weeks. But if you can meet one of these objectives, standards written in the rules, there is some ability to get past that.
Senator Bonna?
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, I have since, you know, having voted for it in Commerce, I've received, I don't know if the other members have, but lots of communication about this, and people have been most concerned about that 12-week. And so for me to continue to support it, I would need to need to see what it would take to get through that 12-week door, because I think that with auto accidents, just like Senator Perry mentioned, there really are lingering effects of those neck and back injuries that can go often beyond the 12 weeks. You know, I have a relative who's, you know, 2 years out is still dealing with it, and she's in physical therapy and chiropractic. And fortunately, you know, that is why auto expenses are so high, because these effects of these accidents are lingering, and soft tissue is prevalent, soft tissue injury. So I do think we need cost containment. I thought it was sound to use the framework from the workers' comp pay schedule. I don't think there should be just unlimited, but I don't want to put a barrier up in front of the people who I represent if they get hurt.
Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I too want people to get their care, and keep in mind that only 9 states have this anymore, that most of them just go to their major medical provider, and that still is available for them here. And I just looked up, you know, I had a sheet, and I would have handed this out if I thought it was going to be more than we're saving $37,000 or whatever, but you know, Minnesota's average premium back, these are 2007, so they're not going to be exact, but Minnesota's was $721. Wisconsin is $582. They're not much different from Minnesota. You know, South Dakota, $534. Iowa, $518. North Dakota, $512. You know, so we have a significantly higher premium, and when people begin to realize that they're paying quite a bit more for basically health insurance twice, because if you have major medical health insurance, if you didn't have this at all, it would pick up dollar one. And they realize that we're paying a lot more here. The case has been made around the country that this is not worth having. I think it is worth having. But I think if we don't reform it, used to be 24, it's 9, we'll be one of those that totally repeals it. And I think that would be the wrong direction.
Okay.
We are wanting to focus on the fiscal note, which is $31,000. And we will have Mr. Gustafson explain that, where we get those savings from.
Madam Chair, members, the fiscal note in your packet indicates that what Senator Gazelka has referenced already, the fact that from the standpoint of the general fund, this saves a little bit of money, and it comes in the form of revenue. Auto insurance companies writing policies in Minnesota need to have filings reviewed by the Department of Commerce, and when they need to update that filing as a result of this change in law, the Department of Commerce estimates about 300 companies would have policies reviewed and pay a $125 filing fee for each of those. That would bring in $37,500. The department obviously would incur the workload of reviewing those policies, and that's noted on the fiscal note as well, around $7,000. The bill, however, does not appropriate that to the department, so they would effectively eat that cost. So the fiscal note demonstrates both the cost and the revenue. We would track the revenue on this if it leaves the committee at $37,000.
We do have one more person who wants to testify. Mr. Goodnow. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Goodnow, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Chiropractic Association. The association represents, membership, we have about 800 of the over 2,000 chiropractors in the state of Minnesota. The association remains opposed to this bill. The bill initially introduced had a lot of bad things in it. This has fewer bad things in it, but it's still targeted at chiropractic. The original bill, the number of the provisions that were taken out of the original bill impacted and hit all providers. This bill really narrows that focus really down to chiropractic. I want to touch a few things that were said because I know there were some questions about where chiropractors are in this process, and then I want to talk about the fiscal note within that context. First of all, if you look at the bill itself and look at starting on line 2.6, the bill itself is limited to soft tissue injuries under the no-fault auto system. Then later on at 2.8, soft tissue is not defined by the injury. Soft tissue injury is not defined by the soft tissue injury, but actually by the treatment that you provide for something. So it's the injury itself is actually defined by the treatment within the statute. And then it's further limited to not apply specifically to medical doctors, osteopaths, and services provided in small hospitals. So if soft tissue injuries are the problem, one of the concerns we have is that you're specifically targeting chiropractic. Physical therapy is also impacted, but may not necessarily be impacted because a lot of those services are provided through the direction of a medical doctor. So that's one concern that we have with the bill. There's been an issue raised that that a large percentage of the cost related to the $20,000 the PIP claims is related to soft tissue injuries. In previous committees, we also heard that what's happening today with the new safety devices in cars is there's fewer severe injuries, and that you're going to see a lot more strains, sprains in the system. People are choosing to go to chiropractors. Why they're choosing to go to chiropractors may be because of billboards, but it may be because they find and it's been proven to be effective treatment for sprains and strains. And that's when people are injured in that way and have a back issue or a neck issue, they tend to, go to a chiropractor rather than a medical doctor. The other thing in comparing the data that's been shared by the insurance industry is they look at comparing chiropractic with medical doctors, with physical therapies, with a number of other things. Typically, if you go through a course of treatment for a lower back pain, neck strains for chiropractic, you go to a chiropractor and you don't see the other professionals. When you go into a medical doctor, you start out with a medical doctor, you're referred out, then you may go off to see a surgeon, you may see the physical therapist, and you may go to the other thing. So the comparisons aren't by episodes of treatment, thereby provider, and that's an unfair comparison as far as how you're comparing costs between the two areas. There's been a question raised is an issue that the Minnesota Chiropractic Association hasn't taken care of its own. The Chiropractic Association is a professional organization of chiropractors. We don't have the enforcement mechanisms to, quote, take care of our own and set standards. We are committed, and we've expressed to the author, the insurance industry, even quite a while ago, that we want to talk about those abusers that they've identified. Want to see the profile of who those abusers are. We don't want to make assumptions that just because we don't agree with the marketing techniques or the business practices and the way they set up their business, that those are necessarily abusers. They've just chosen to market their services in a different way. They may be, I don't know. But we want to see the profile of abusers and really make sure that we have the proof that they're abusers. And when we talk about the abusers, then we want to look at appropriate responses to those abusers rather than passing a bill that impacts all chiropractors. And this impacts all chiropractors because it limits the treatment parameters, and it also limits payment for everybody. Any chiropractor that makes a claim under no-fault auto, their rates will be reduced. If you go to an osteopath instead, your rates are not reduced. The other issue is with regard to unfettered care, that there's no constraints on the system.
We were going to try and stay on the topic right. of and I'm fiscal getting, issues.
Yeah, I'm getting to that, and it leads up to the fiscal note and where I think there's a problem with the fiscal note is that there are limits in place right now in the current system, the $20,000 cap. They also have the requirement where at a certain point you can get an independent medical exam, at which point they can contest the care that's being given right now under the system. Yes. Now, with regard to the fiscal note, if you look at the fiscal note, and if you remember the testimony that's been given, that under a workers' comp system, you have 12 weeks of care. And then at that point, you move over to your other health care system. That can be private insurance for some people. But for other people, if you're a state employee, it will be the state employee health fund. And if you're on medical assistance or Minnesota Care, it's a shift to the Minnesota Care, the public programs. I noticed this fiscal note only went to the Department of Commerce. It doesn't look like it was vetted or even sent to the Department of Human Services for analysis of the impact on the Minnesota CARE program or the Medicaid program. And so, Madam Chair, members of the committee, as a finance committee, I don't think you have a complete fiscal note here. I don't think you have a complete understanding of the fiscal impacts that this bill may have on the public health care program and to the state of Minnesota's budget. And so I would raise that concern and that issue because I do think it will have an impact. But if it doesn't, and it's I know it's left up to the discretion of MMB and the Department of Human Services, you should at least ask the department to make that analysis. And apparently, with the fiscal note I see here, that was never done.
Mr. Gano, one of the things I've always been curious about, when you go in to see a chiropractor or doctor, one of the things they ask is, how did this injury occur? And if, you know, you can check if it was a workers' comp injury or an auto accident. And you know, I always was curious about that, so I asked. And they said, well, there's a different rate structure for those treatment of those various injuries. And I thought, why? I mean, why would there be a different rate structure if I fell at home and got an injury, or if I got the same injury in a car accident or at work, and they're treating me the same? Why does one cost more than the other? And I never could figure that out. And I kind of think that's what Senator Gazelka is trying to address here. At least, I mean, we're still seeing two rate structures. We still are going to have the workers' comp rate structure with this one. And then there's the private insurance rate structure. And then there's the one that the state pays for services if someone's on a public plan. But I could never figure out, if you're getting the same treatment, why one would have been getting charged so much higher.
Madam Chair, in response to that, I would say, first of all, they need to find the payer source, because the insurance companies themselves will ask how the injury was sustained, because they want to make sure that they're actually liable for it or not. But to the fiscal note, and that's the issue if we want to focus on the fiscal note, with regard to the committee, I think there's two issues. The unfairness of this in focusing and going after chiropractic specifically and not applying it to other providers. But the number two issue is I do think the fiscal note is flawed in the sense that we didn't ask enough agencies to respond.
Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair and members, I just want to give you some perspective on this, and it's directly answering your question. You know, if you take a look at the CPT code 98941, which is chiropractic manipulative treatment, if you look at the Medicare reimbursement rate, it's $33.82, which is maybe too low. But then you look at Minnesota work comp rates reimbursement, that's $49.61. So it's a significant increase, and that's higher than what you'd paid through your health insurance. But if you look at what they average paid out on a Minnesota PIP, no fault, instead of the 33 Medicaid rate, instead of the 49 work comp, it's $63.16. So you see that there's if a chiropractor would prefer an auto insurance claim because there's no accountability there.
Madam Chair, the same differentials would be true for other providers as well.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was one question I was going to ask. Would that be the same for other? I guess I want to go back to a couple of things here, because I'm really even more concerned about this bill, Senator Gazelka. Mr. Goodnow, you made the comment. There's two questions. First of all, you made the comment that you have asked the insurance companies to come forth with profiles of abusers. Have they done that?
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, no.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
Thank you for that. And secondly, Mr. Goodnow, would you go through this 2.6 to 2.12? There's a section in there which really got to me. You were saying now that as we go deeper into this, and I apologize, I didn't take time to look up Minnesota Chapter 5221 and go through that, but you were saying that it brings it down to the point where it releases everybody else that manipulates soft tissue except for physical therapy and chiropractors?
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, if you look at lines 2.6 to 2.8, that makes a reference to Rule Chapter 5221, which is soft tissue injury. That would apply to any providers of treatment under soft treatment issue.
That's not the amended version.
Well, he's got the first engrossment, okay. So you're...
Is it?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay, then the next sentence after that, it's defined by the treatment. It says that it's defined as a procedure, the code is set forth in 522, which also applies to all those healthcare providers. And then it goes on to say that other than treatment, such treatment delivered by healthcare provider defined in Minnesota Rules Part 5221.0100, Subpart 1A. I believe, if I remember correctly, that specifically is medical doctors, medical doctors, and osteopaths, and a medical facility described in Section 176.136, Subdivision 1B. That's a little bit challenging to read, but the only facility listed in that section is a small hospital.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your letting me keep asking these things. So, Senator Gazelka, if I were to say to you, what would happen to this bill if on line 2.10 after chapter 5221 there was a period and all else was deleted?
Can you repeat that?
And the reason I bring that up, Senator Gazelka, it would take away. I'm having such strong issues that we are so focused on just one. What's to say that others aren't abusing the system and haven't been caught or looked at? And I'm just saying that it really looks bad that we're so pinpointing one group of people. And if, in fact, Mr. Goodnow sits here and says that the insurance companies have not brought back profiles to them so that they could probably adjust and work on their own, then I know what you're doing. I so much want to support this thing, but I'm really having issues with this part now.
Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, I don't want to take too much of the committee's time. I think it's important, this notion that we did meet with Kevin Goodnow and some of the leadership, and I don't usually prefer to do this. Mr. Goodnow came up to me yesterday and said we're interested in sitting down and talking to the industry, and that's the first time that we've had that communication. We are having this bill driven by the data in the system. So for us, we're not, the focus isn't abusers. The focus is a no-fault auto system that we require citizens in this state to buy a coverage, and there's no medical cost controls. Is there abuse? There is abuse and fraud. And the Senate Commerce Committee spent 3 hours and looked at quite a bit of data and statistics that I know we don't have here today. I don't know if you want it here today, but there's a fuller picture that we're getting. This committee are getting snippets that we spent 3 hours on. There's no medical cost controls. There's no disputing that. And our comment to the chiropractors, to the physical therapists, I've met with both, is that 70% of the dollars, and it's growing, is going to soft tissue treatment, 70%. So we believe that's the appropriate focus. Hospitals get a slice of it, and we've got all the statistics that we brought to the Senate Commerce Committee by profession, the EMS. So we've got the data. Our mission is not, it isn't a focus on abusers. It's a focus on a system that requires every citizen to buy $20,000 a major medical, and there's no cost controls on it. Zero. We pay rack rate. We pay whatever it's billed. And any other healthcare system would sink under those parameters. So it's not really an intention to pick on a provider group. It's to focus on where the dollars in the system are going. And that 70% 10 years ago was less than 60%. And in a few more years, it's going to be higher. So this is not a bill that's saying a mission to say there's a handful of providers that are out of control and we need to pass a bill to focus on the handful. So there's not really a profile of an abuser. That's not the issue. Citizens are paying in auto policies $20,000 of medical coverage, and there's no cost controls on it, zero. So for us, it's data-driven. It's not a focus on 50 or 100 providers, and if we did dealt with that, we can go home and we fixed it. We haven't fixed it. The fraud and abuse investigations is going on at the Commerce Department and elsewhere, and that needs to continue. That's not the primary driving issue. That's why not. That bill's not here today.
experience
for fraud and abuse. That's part of the system. It's here today because there's no cost controls. And the numbers of Senator Gazelka, we have a lot of other numbers. And the data shows that there is, in our opinion, excessive care being provided that's not consumers are losing. If excessive care is being paid for in the system, it's eating up dollars of coverage. That's not good for them. If it's not medically appropriate to give 38 adjustments, and we're under the major medical system, they might pay for 10 because that's a managed care model. I think it's a fair question to ask. Shouldn't we bring some of that, not all of it, some of it into the auto system to help the costs of Minnesota consumers? That's the bottom line. And we're interested in helping the costs of consumers and what they're paying for in their car insurance.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Goodenow, I did not just briefly, and we aren't going to rehash the whole Commerce Committee.
Well, and Madam Chair, I don't want to do that. I just want to make it clear to the committee that the first meeting I had with Mr. Johnson, where I've said that we want to talk about identifying the outliers and try to correct those abusers who you have concerns about, the first time I talked to him about that wasn't yesterday. We had meetings before the election, we had meetings after the election, and we actually had a big meeting with a bunch of his members to talk about things. And I believe at every meeting, Mr. Johnson, I mentioned that let's talk about who the real problems are in the system, let's identify who those abusers are, and let's try to work on legislation that goes after the abusers, not all chiropractors.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is not, frankly, a new issue. We've been trying to rein this in for, well, since 2005 when I was here, and probably before that. So this is something that we've been trying to correct, and we've made no improvement. And like I said, if we don't improve this, someday it'll be repealed, and I think that'd be a mistake.
Thank you, Senator or Mr. Carlson had asked to testify.
Madam Chair, could I ask a question? Mr. Goodenow.
I'm sorry, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Soft tissue injuries and chiropractic. I usually think of that as more the chiropractors as being able for adjustment of bone structure and that type of thing. Is it the massage therapy aspect of the practice now that is the use for soft tissue injury?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I believe soft tissue includes the issues and injuries related to neck pain, lower back pain, which includes the issues of the spine. And it's a little bit above my pay grade, but I do have some doctors of chiropractic behind me that can kick me if I just misspoke.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson, I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. Just some brief comments, specifically, I think, related to Senator Bonhoff's question about the work comp, and I want to help create a record here. And Senator Perry, to your question, I want you to know that our association convened a group of insurers, providers, lawyers. We met twice a month throughout the summer of 2009 into the winter of 2010 to look at how we can update our no-fault auto system. It's a good system. It benefits consumers. We are 28th nationally in insurance premiums, but the system can be improved. And we applaud Senator Gazelka for bringing this issue forward. But I want to make sure that we understand what's happening here as with the work comp treatment parameters and fee schedule that is being inserted into the bill here. And Senator Roebling, to your question about different rates, the service is the same. The question is, what rate is it reimbursed at? It isn't that I charge you $100 and I charge someone else $50. The question is, what am I, let's say the service is $100. Work comp is going to provide me $50. A private pay client, unfortunately, is probably going to have to pay me $100. Medicare is going to pay me about 40 cents on the dollar, about $40. So the question isn't that I have a different charge. The question is I get a different reimbursement. And that's why providers ask that question, under what system are they going to get reimbursed on, so they know how to charge it out. It isn't that they have a different, necessarily a different fee schedule, whether or not you're an auto accident or a work comp claim. The question is the reimbursement is different. But on Senator Bonhoff's question on the work comp, there is a procedure for an injured worker to get outside of the 12-week treatment system. And this is the record that I want to create here, because I want to make sure that we're adopting all of the work comp treatment standards and parameter. Because what happens in the work comp system is when you reach that 12-week period and you believe you're making medical improvement, what you have to do is you have to file a petition with signed by your doctor, saying that you are making medical improvement and continued care will help you move forward. And that goes to a hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings, and I want to make certain that what we're talking about here is those getting outside of the 12-week would be handled, in my estimation, through a no-fault arbitration that's handled at the Office of Administrative Hearings in the comp system. But I want to make certain that you know that in the work comp system, when an employee has to fight to get that care beyond the 12 weeks, and it is proven that it's medically necessary and they are making medical progress, when they have to fight to do that, the work comp system pays the employee and their lawyer for going forward to get that continued care. If we don't have that similar system in the no-fault area, you know, there's no consumer of modest means that is going to be able to go to a no-fault arbitration and pay a lawyer whatever amount per hour to go to the no-fault arbitration let's say you charge $100 an hour. You know, the service isn't worth that. You're not going to go to that no-fault arbitration to get that continued care unless, like the work comp system, you're getting reimbursed for that. Otherwise, there's no incentive to do it. And that's when you would hit the wall, the complete wall at 12 weeks, because no one, without that ability to be made whole, no one would actually go to that no-fault arbitration to get continued care. And that's where I think Mr. Goodnow's comments about a complete fiscal note were on point, because we haven't really looked at impact on the judiciary and the arbitration system. We did just focus on commerce because what will happen, and Mr. Goodnow is absolutely right, when you fall off that ledge at 12 weeks, then that care that goes on will be shifted to your employer-paid health care, Medicare, or to the state and some other state-paid system of health care. So after that 12 weeks, unless there's an ability for the employer or the injured person to get that care, you are going to fall off that cliff and someone else will have to pick up that care. So we applaud what Senator Gazelka is trying to accomplish here. We no fault you didn't talk about Section 2 of the bill, but you need to know that the wage loss, when we adopted no fault in 1974, the wage loss was $200. Since 1974, it's made the excursion all the way up to $250. Those need to be updated. He's absolutely right in making those changes, but we just want to make sure when we try and insert an employment workplace injury standard into the private auto insurance that we pay for that care, we just want to make sure that we're doing it in a right way. And we applaud his efforts, but there are some issues that need to be closed. Also, the definition of soft tissue, by the way, is everything. Could be brain injury, nerves. I mean, it isn't, you know, that's the issue that I talked to Senator Gazelka about after the hearing. We want to make sure that soft tissue is the kinds of injuries that we're talking about here that we think they are. But soft tissue is everything, brain injury. It's more than just lower back pain. So thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Bono.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with regard to that testimony, Senator Gazelka, what is your understanding of how this change and moving into the workers' comp structure will be paid for in terms of the appeal at the 12-week process?
Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonner, Mr. Johnson and I were talking about it before Mr. Carlson brought it up, so I'm going to let Mr. Johnson give what he was trying to tell me, whispering.
Mr. Johnson.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Bonner, I think I found the section of the rules. My hesitancy when you first asked is that it's a lengthy set of rules, and there is a whole section on departure from the parameters. It sets forth six alternatives. But specifically on your question, obviously, we don't have an administrative structure, so we're not trying to copy the work comp decision-making process. we're using the specific rules that deal with medical, and so the disputes in the no-fault auto system will be handled as they are today, and as Mr. Carlson referenced, that law sets up a mandatory arbitration process where a consumer can go in, and they do today in fairly large numbers on disputed medical bills. So there is a process where, and I don't know if somebody can correct me what the costs are to access that process. It's not a trial. I mean, it's handled by practitioners, lawyers, that sit at the table, and the individual comes in, and the evidence is presented, and I don't have the costs here today. It's relatively inexpensive, and I think it's intended to be kind of consumer-friendly to access it, to present the data and let the arbitrator, and then the decision is binding. There's really not, virtually no appeals come out of that arbitration process. So the evidence is presented, and the practitioner, the lawyer, makes a decision on whether or not who's right on that specific medical issue. So I think the process would be in place. I'd have to think through that in terms of the application, but that's what's in place today, so that's what's going to be utilized. We're not going to create a new mechanism to change the decision-making process, and I believe that would operate.
Mr. Jensen, I'm thinking that this happens with the private insurance quite often. I believe, like, even my insurance says you get X number of chiropractic visits a year, and if you go beyond that, you have to put in an appeal to show why you need to have additional visits and therapy or whatever it is. And I'm not sure where that goes. I've never done it, but you appeal to the company to allow to see if they'll approve additional payments for visits. I think there must be a process in most companies' systems to handle that. And I don't know if it's always as formal as the workers' comp one, where they almost have a court system.
Madam Chair, and the work comp system has a formal administrative law judges, and it's set up in the system, and that is different. But auto has in the law this mandatory arbitration process. It's been in the law since inception, and it's run by the American Arbitration Association, and so there's a many-year record of the process, and it is licensed attorneys that are sitting at the table collecting the evidence and then making the decision under it. Major medical is a whole different world, and you know, the coverages are different, and we went through a lot of that in the policy committee, and I think you'll see lesser issues there. Major medical policies, I've got examples today in Minnesota that are sold that the coverage in it for soft tissue treatment is like $500 maximum for any manipulative treatment therapy. So those are approved policies in Minnesota today. So when you get to $500, you're done. So there's really not many out clauses to that. So the systems do vary quite a bit. And I think that's another example of the contrast, the no-fault auto system with major medical, but I know we don't want to get into that. So the point is that the systems vary in their decision-making process, and the no-fault auto has a formal one in place in terms of the mandatory arbitration.
Thank you. Mr. Carlson.
And Madam Chair, just to follow up on that point, the American Arbitration Association handles about 5,000 no-fault arbitrations a year. But here's the difference. Right now, our members do those no-fault arbitrations for free. They don't charge their client to go to the no-fault arbitration to present the evidence. They don't get paid for that. We're now, and this is what is a concern for consumers, when we graft the work comp treatment standards into no-fault, and we have a significant consumer population that is now going to have to go to the no-fault arbitration system to get care beyond the 12 weeks, and there's no compensation for anyone or no incentive for anyone to do that, because you're going to have to pay out of your pocket, pay a lawyer out of your pocket to go to that no-fault arbitration just to get this care. That's what our concern is who's going to take that step to the no-fault arbitration to get that care beyond the 12 weeks. In the comp system, it works and operates at the Office of Administrative Hearings, because at the end of the day, the employee and their lawyer who's representing them are paid out of the system when they have to argue about whether or not they need that benefit. And we just want to know how that's going to operate in this system, which is not reflected in the fiscal note at all, because there is a cost to the system when you do that. And
Senator,
that is not, we're not saying that there isn't a need for update or reform. We're not saying that. We're just saying we want to make sure what the unintended consequences are when we do that.
That's Senator Fischbach.
Madam Chair, and I do appreciate what Senator Gazelka is doing and, you know, trying to get a handle on and trying to reform. And Mr. Carlson even mentioned, you know, not opposed to reform and trying to improve the system. But I guess there's questions regarding, and in particular we're in the Finance Committee, the fiscal note, and wondering if that could be, you know, make sure that we've got the information that we need to. But I guess in general, too, just understanding, and I know we're not supposed to necessarily in the Finance Committee look at the whole issue but and focus on the finance, but there's a lot of questions surrounding it. And so I am wondering if it would be advantageous right now to lay it on the table. And so I'll make that motion.
And as Senator Gazelka, since it's in the Finance Committee, it would not miss the deadline, because it would be we don't have a deadline here. We may want to do that. Well, what are your thoughts?
Madam Chair, because it won't miss the deadline, I accept that. I certainly want to be open to members to have conversation. In the end, I think it needs reform. And I think it needs accountability. And if we do not do that, the cost will continue to go up, which is, it's bad for consumers in the end. And so, but I'm willing to work with people and get the best bill we can.
Okay. So is there anyone else who came here expressly today to testify on this bill? So they wouldn't have to maybe come back again if they're here? Okay. Then I will just take the action of laying the bill on the table. And then it'll be easy to take it off when we want to do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Senator Gazelka. Our next bill up is Senator Berglund.
Okay. Bill Gill.
Good morning, Senator Berglund.
Good morning. First of all, I'd just like to say thank you so much for finding time on the agenda for this bill. This is a bill that deals with the personal care attendant program. And for those of you that were here last biennium, you will remember that there were major changes and reductions in spending made in the personal care attendant program. There was a pot of money set aside for a group of people that have either one activity of daily living that they're deficient in or mental health diagnoses to get some services. And at that time, we were thinking that there would be a waiver available, but as of now, we aren't even sure how that waiver is going to work, so we're not sure that waiver is going to work for this group of people. So this bill creates sort of a second tier of personal care attendant services so these people don't lose out on services on July 1st. And it limits them to no more than 2 hours of personal care attendant services per day. Of course, that could be used flexibly by the client. So maybe, you know, a lot of these people have problems with bathing and grooming and dressing. So maybe they would have somebody come out and help them with their bathing and grooming, you know, 4 days a week and use the other hours for assistance they might need with housekeeping. I do have an amendment that I'd like to offer to put the bill in the proper shape. I'd like to thank our very able Senate staff for helping me get this amendment together. The first part of the amendment, it's an A3 amendment. I'd move adoption of the amendment. The first part of the amendment just reiterates and makes it clear that recipients in this tier of the personal care attendant program are not eligible for more than two units per day. And that's not 2 hours. I misspoke. 2 units is half an hour per day. a unit is 15 minutes. So, and then on page 3 of the amendment, we're deleting the money that was set aside for this group of people because this language doesn't actually appropriate it for the purpose that the bill now appropriates it for, and so we would no longer want that language, and we would want the language that's in the bill that authorizes the department to spend this money.
Senator Berglund, is the fiscal note drafted to the amendment?
Actually, the fiscal note is incorrect. The fiscal note is drafted to the bill as it was heard in the Health and Human Services Committee. There was an amendment made to increase the savings, and that amendment is not reflected in the fiscal notes, so the fiscal notes should actually show savings in fiscal year 12 and then again in fiscal year 13 of 70,000 more state funds. And I will request an updated fiscal note if the committee sees fit to send the bill to the floor. This language is in Senator Hand's omnibus bill. I'm sure he'd like to have the increased savings be able to be reflected in the conference committee. The reason I, Senator Hand was gracious enough to let the bill go separately, and the reason that I'd asked for the hearing today is because the department needs lead time. All of the people that are affected by this need to be sent notices. And so not knowing exactly what the timing might end up being for the omnibus bill, this bill going separately would be helpful for the administration of this program.
Okay. Mr. Albright, do you want to provide us with any further explanation on the fiscal impact?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senator Berglund described, I think, correctly what's missing on this fiscal note. The other thing, there are really two problems with the fiscal note. The first one is that, and Senator Berglund's amendment fixed it, in that this fiscal note assumed that the money that was set aside in 2009 was available, but there was no language in the bill before this amendment that actually had that direction in it. So it deals with that issue. And then, as Senator Berglund said, she had an amendment in the Health and Human Services Committee to take out the evaluation. And that has the effect of an additional $90,000 of savings over the biennium for this provision.
So I'm just trying to understand, in looking at the fiscal note, for fiscal year 12, what would the number be?
Madam Chair, it would be, the bottom line would be 302,000.
302. And how would it affect fiscal 13?
That would be a savings of 397.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions about the amendment? If not, all in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Any further explanation of the bill, Senator Berglund?
I do have someone here to testify if you want them to. They are supporting the bill. Otherwise, if everybody would like to get done early, we don't need to have that testimony.
We do have a little time yet, and as long as you've brought someone in, if they want to say a few words about the bill. And then we also have Ann Henry.
She's the person.
She's the person. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Ann Henry, and I'm with the Minnesota Disability Law Center at Legal Aid. And we thank Senator Berglund for shepherding this issue along. We participated in the significant sweeping changes for the personal care assistant program in 2009. And at that time, this group of between 2,800 and over 3,000 people who have behavioral issues or need help with an activity of daily living were going to be cut off. And I think the testimony at that time led the legislature to say, wait a minute, this is going to be too deep, and these people are still going to need something. And that's why the alternatives language and stakeholder group and funding was established. The stakeholder group worked. We would like to do more. We realize that's not possible this year. This is a very minimal bridge to people to be able to get a little bit of service. It also has an impact on schools, I would just mention, for children, because the schools, if these kids remain eligible, the schools can use this program and use their own funds to match. So in other words, they can get some federal money to help with children who have mental illnesses and autism in the schools.
Would that be to provide like a para?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes. Essentially, yes. So we think this will also, we have clients who are adults who have had hospitalizations monthly due to mood disorders and have been able to get a PCA just for a couple of hours a day to help recognize symptoms, get, you know, more help when needed, stay out of the hospital for 2 years. So this minimal help is going to really, I think, make a difference. We're going to still have more to do on this in the future, but we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Who determines when someone is eligible for help? Is there a grand checklist that they have to go down and they have a certain number of issues that will make them eligible?
Madam Chair, yes. There is an assessment. It was substantially redone in 2009 to make it more consistent across the state. The county public health nurses do it. And it does assess whether you need help in an activity of daily living or whether you have very serious behavior problems such that you're a danger to yourself or you're causing, you know, property damage that needs immediate response.
And Madam Chair, the department is in the process of adding kind of a parallel common assessment tool for people with mental illness to determine the level of services they need. So in the future, we may be doing some more work on this. But this bill is really needed because otherwise on July 1st, this group of people will lose all their services.
Are there any other questions from the committee? If not, Senator Berglund moves Senate File 384 as amended to be recommended to pass, and it would be going to the floor from here.
Yes.
All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. And
thank you very much, everyone.
And that is our last agenda item for today. So thank you, members. And we will adjourn until next week. We'll let you know.